Kevin.
Morning, Paul. How are you?
It's pretty good.
We are waiting for Mr. Romano, and Ms. Cardullo is not going to be joining this morning. She has a I think she's on a plane.
Okay. As I understand, Robert's Rules of Order, we could conceivably start once, but we can't vote on things. Is that right? Like if it comes down to it, just people are really late.
Well, we actually have a quorum right now,
Okay.
with Dr. Leck, with you, Mr. Ball, I see is on, and Mr. Wallace is on. Haven't seen. Let me just double check and make sure that Dr. Leck was on. She's on.
And you
I'm
said,
here. I'm here.
okay.
Mr. Wallace is on too.
Mr. Wallace is he did join. So
Yeah.
we do have a quorum if you would like to get started.
Yeah, and then why don't we do this? We'll switch around. We'll move the Lyons Legacy question to the front of the new programs,
Okay.
just so that Scott, because Scott's lead on that.
Okay.
All right, give me one second so that I can read what I'm supposed to read.
I do want to make sure that we have is a has Elizabeth Campbell joined us? Elizabeth, Dr. Mittman, Assistant AG Seamus Monahan will not be attending the meeting today. He has a hearing, but in his place will be Elizabeth Campbell. So I don't see her on yet.
Okay.
Hold on, let me look. Mr. Romano's trying to get in. Let me.
Yeah, Mr. Romano just texted me. I guess he's trying to get in. I'm waiting to be let into our meeting.
Yeah, I don't see him in here. So let me, maybe he's in the other one, the one in the afternoon. They're two different meeting notices. So he may be trying to.
Here, I'll text him.
Yeah, I haven't seen his name pop up to be admitted.
I just texted him to see if he was in the right meeting.
Okay, I think we can go ahead and get started if you would. Let me just one more check one more time for Elizabeth Campbell. Dr. Mittman, I think we can go ahead and move forward. I don't know that anything in the in this particular grouping of schools would require AG input on.
Okay.
So we're good to go.
All right, we'll do our best. Great. Well, welcome everyone. It is 10:03 a.m. and therefore I'm calling the Arizona Board of Private Post-Secondary Education December board meeting Thursday, December 8th, meeting to order. So, notice is hereby given to the general public and members of the Arizona State Board for Post-Secondary Education that the board will hold a meeting open to the public on the date and time indicated above. The date and time I just said. The meeting will be held digitally online. A full agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found at www.ppsc.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, which we will do today, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during specific time blocks. The board chairperson, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. That'd be fun. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may hold an executive session on any of the listed agenda items to obtain legal advice, ARS 38-431.03A3. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may also hold an executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 on any agenda item listed for the sole purpose of discussion or consideration of records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law. Americans with Disabilities Act. Persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation, such as a sign language interpreter or a copy of this document in an alternative format, by contacting the executive director, Kevin LaMountain, at 602-542-5716. And Mr. LaMountain, please call the roll.
Dr. Mittman.
Present.
Dr. Mittman is present. Dr. Leck.
Present.
Dr. Leck is present. Mr. Romano.
Present.
Mr. Romano is present. Mr. Ball?
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Mr. Wallace?
Present.
Mr. Wallace is present. Ms. Cardullo? Ms. Cardullo will not be attending today. And for staff, I'm Kevin LaMountain, Executive Director. Keith Blanchard?
Present.
Jacqueline Rome?
Present.
And has Elizabeth Campbell from the AG office joined us? So all present and accounted for.
Thank you. Are there any conflicts of interest? And maybe Mr. LaMountain, just go through the board and starting with me, I'll say Paul Mittman, no.
Dr. Leck?
No.
Mr. Romano?
No.
Mr. Ball?
No.
Mr. Wallace?
No.
There are no conflicts of interest.
Okay, great. So I think everyone's seen the agenda. However, under new applications, Lions Legacy Equestrian Academy will get moved up to the first position, followed by Apex Dental and Code Steel. Can we get a motion, or I'm going to make a motion, to accept the audio recordings as the official open minutes of the board meeting from October 27, 2022. Can I get a second, please?
I'll second. Mike Romano.
Mr. LaMountain?
Great. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo is absent. By your vote of five ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Great. Next on the agenda is the review and discussion of Executive Director's report. Over to you, Mr. LaMountain.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Mittman, members of the board. I'm going to make it brief because we've got a lot to get through in a couple of hours today. So I don't know if there's any questions that you have. I put the information in there regarding our updated financials. They're going to be up. Those will be updated through the end of October. My new financials will be available to our board on Monday, the 12th of December, and I will send those off to you, and we can have a discussion about it further. But as you can see, both in our 2056 account, which is our operations account, and in our student tuition recovery fund account, we are ahead of budget. And in terms of revenue, and we maintain the same expenditure line. I did want to point out quickly the Student Tuition Recovery Fund is currently at $560,488, which is about where we thought we would be with at this particular point in time. We're halfway through the fiscal year. We will continue to maintain a close eye and watch on expenses from now through June 30, and with the intent that we may not have to bill. It still does appear that we would need to do one more billing cycle for Student Tuition Recovery Fund, which would put us well above the $500,000. But we'll continue to monitor that as we get closer to the end of the end of the fiscal year. The rest of the information is pretty self-explanatory in there. The one thing I did want to point out is I did add yesterday or the day before yesterday, the legislative committee assignments for the upcoming 2023-2024 legislature. So I provided that in your board folder. We'll show you who's on the committees for education. I have all the ones in the Senate. The House has not provided the Democratic component to it yet. But those are the ones that we will be in the process of making contact with over the next month or two as we learn the new legislature and learn the new environment in the governor's office and get a chance to know who all our new folks are going to be there. So I don't know if there's any additional questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments on the executive director's report? Okay, hearing none, let's move on. Next item on the agenda, review, discussion, and possible action to include but not limited to acceptance, rejection, or modification of the stipulated agreement for licensure between Arizona Private Post-Secondary Board and Brookline College. I am the lead on this, and let's see, who do we have here? Representing the institution, Messrs. Watkins and Corbin. Do you have a opening statement that you'd like to share?
Hello, this is Don Corbin, Senior Vice President of Compliance for Brookline College. We also have Janice Paulson, our CEO, on the call, and Dr. Abdul Yosef, Chief Academic Officer, on the call. I'd like to defer to our CEO, Janice. Janice, would you like to make any opening statement?
Hi, good morning, everyone. Oops, I'm sorry. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking the time today to speak with us. We reached out to Mr. LaMountain as soon as we heard from the nursing board. We accept everything that they've provided us. We are accepting their guidance. We're working with a consultant, and we agree with the actions that the board has taken, and we feel that this will lead to better outcomes for our students and for the university. And thank you.
Okay. All right. So just to recap, so we have a consent agreement with the Board of Nursing that the that Brookline College has already signed. And as you mentioned, Ms. Paulson, I think Ms. Paulson, that you're in agreement, and therefore the consent agreement that that was structured with this board essentially builds off of that. There's an increase in the bond requirement. There is either monthly or quarterly reporting that's up to the discretion of the executive director and staff. Education records will be shared with the board, and of course compliance with the Arizona Board of Nursing consent. I don't think we need to go into a whole lot of other detail with respect to either the school's financials. You know, that said, the school was profitable last year, about $8 million, about $41 million of total revenue. And I think, you know, the main purpose here is to agree to the stipulated agreement, which I think the renewal of the degree granting license is contingent upon. So are there any other questions from members of the board?
This is Mike Romano. I didn't know if the school would be able to expound on kind of their next steps or what they're thinking in regards to kind of righting the ship with some of the outcomes and what that looks like. You don't have to be exhaustive by any means, but just providing some additional color would be appreciated.
And you're muted. If someone from Brookline is talking, whoever it is.
Sorry, I am talking. I believe we have Dr. Yosef is with us. I'm hoping that he can unmute. If not, I can. Oh, great. Thank you.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Absolutely. We have been working with Brookline College, improving students' learning outcomes, and especially the NCLEX pass rate. And we have put together a full strategy and supporting the students by providing NCLEX coaching and training throughout the curriculum from day one and beyond graduation. We have three faculty members that are fully focused on supporting students after graduation until they become licensed. We have looked at every aspects of the application process to make sure that the students test when is the maximum chance for them to pass the board. We have a full partnership with a test preparation company called ATI, and we provide testing for every subject, remediation, and retesting. So we see a significant improvement since July to now on the students that currently enrolled. And I am confident that we have we're going to the right direction. I moved my office from the California corporate office to Phoenix. So I'm in Phoenix campus, at the Brookline campus, making sure I support the dean and the assistant dean and the faculty with my expertise as a nurse. I've been a nurse for 30 years, and NCLEX preparation is my area of strength, and I feel like we are confident that we will be leading the campus to improve the outcome. It takes time. It's like turning a ship. It takes time to turn the ship and make sure the team is engaged. And I feel like we have great faculty members here. They want to do the right thing, but they need faculty training and resources. And we're investing a lot of resources for faculty training and students resources on campus as well as online. Thank you.
Thank you for that explanation. I appreciate it. You had mentioned that you're already starting to see some benefits since July from that time period. I realize there's a 12-month window on the stipulation piece. As you progress, do you anticipate, is there a milestone that you've set for yourself in regards to looking for achieving closer to the NCLEX outcome of 80%?
Absolutely. I mean, we can see that cohort over cohort pass rate improved significantly over, like, we had a group that graduated in April. Their pass rate is much lower than the one just graduated in August because we were able to provide them with a lot more support. So they went up about 12 points, and that's great. My goal is to achieve, to reach the 80 by the end of the four quarters. So that way the average, according to the agreement, to reach 80% on the NCLEX for the students. And we also not looking at the first attempt. We also looking at all attempts. So even the students who fail the first attempt, we bring them back. We train them. We coach them and let them test again because we want to make sure they become licensed and they work as a nurse because there's a huge nursing shortage, and we want to make sure we support the community. We see a significant improvement, but as I mentioned, because this program is 3 years, it takes time to impact student outcome. And I think the longer we have the student with us, the more positive outcome will show for that cohort.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Dr. Mittman, no further questions from me.
Thank you.
I have a quick question, just to follow up real quick. If you don't achieve the 80% this year, has the Board of Nursing given you a deadline in order to get that, or would there be further sanctions if you don't get the 80% by the end of this year?
So the way this consent agreement is structured, in the first year, we have to get an average of 80% pass rate in the first year. And that when we complete this first year successfully, we can start enrolling students in 2023 by like the fall of 2023. If you don't achieve the 80, then the board, we're going to bring it to the board for a discussion. And usually the board will have a, will discuss the possibility maybe either to give us a small group of students or not to give us any students and let us continue focusing on the current students for the second year. So we have a 2 years agreement to reach the goal. Phase one is 80 overall average, and phase two has different stipulation, has a quarterly pass rate of 80. But my experience with boards of nursing, I work with six boards of nursing because we're in six different states. The board will come to see, are you making a significant difference? Can we see you trending up or trending low? And usually if we are trending up consistently, the board feel good that we are working on improving the student outcome, the student learning experience. In some cases, the board may say, okay, we're going to give you a small group of students because you'll be able to implement all this success strategy on them from day one. And some boards may say, I'll let you just focus on the students you have. But we have 2 full years to improve the outcome. Usually the board will not come in and say, you stop teaching or something like that until the full 2 years is over. And usually, unless the board sees there's no lack of accountability and we're not investing, we're not training faculty, we're not supporting students, then boards of nursing will take action, more harsh action, I would say. But if they see that we're going toward the right direction, and we can show them that with statistics and evidence, and they can meet with students and graduates and validate that. We receive the board reports from the National Council of State Boards, and they receive the same report. So they can validate that we're going toward the right direction.
So your consent agreement is for 23, 24. So calendar year 23 and calendar year 24 is the 2 years?
September, yeah, September. We signed September this year. So it's September 24, the end of it.
Okay, so they're not expecting you to have 80% though. I mean, the year's almost, like the calendar year's almost over when the NCLEX scores will be rolled up, right? So they're not expecting 80% come this spring?
Okay. No, it's not calendar year. They expect from September to September. Okay. So by September of 2023, they want to see an average of 80. And then we have the agreement until September 24.
Okay, thank you.
No problem, thank you.
And I assume that the TTP complaints and violations are being addressed as well. Let's see.
Oh, you mean that? Oh, yeah, the clinical transition to practice. Yes, right. Absolutely. We have hired a dean that is focused on clinical affairs to make sure all the clinical related issues, the TTP, the clinical rotation, all the other concerns the board has been taken care of, as well as all the, the student resources. So all these items are been corrected, and we submitted evidence to the Board of Nursing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Are there other questions for Dr. Youssef? Or any of the other members of Brookline? Hearing none, I will make a motion to renew the regular degree granting license for all campuses and approve the attached stipulated agreement with an increased bond from $0 to $1,011,491. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Dr. Lett. Okay, Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. But you go to five ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
And to Brookline, do you accept the stipulation?
Yes, we do. And thank you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Best wishes for a good rest of the year and holiday season. We have a question or a comment.
It's not a question. Dr. Mittman, if I may, I just want to commend Brookline College for, and Mr. Watkins, Mr. Corvin, and Dr. Yosef, they've been very, very, while this is a challenging time for them, they've been extremely communicative to our board, and a pleasure to work with. So I just want to make sure that they understand that we thank them very much for the time and commitment that they put towards this.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next, we have review, discussion, and possible action on the following pending license applications. There is a Finance Committee renewal approval for regular license. And first up, first and only today, is Arizona Heart Foundation with its accredited vocational and degree programs. And I am the lead, and I saw Ms. Banahan here. And so you'd like to make an opening statement, either you or Mr. Kerrigan, go right ahead.
Well, thank you, and Merry Christmas to everyone on the board. The one exciting news that we can share is that we had our visit from ABHES in October, and it went, we were visited by Mr. LaMountain, which was wonderful. But it was a very successful visit. We had one deficiency at the time, which was we did not have all the outside infield specialists present at the advisory council. So we have since added new members to the council, and we've had a new board meeting and have met all the requirements. So we sent in the renewal application again. So that's kind of our most exciting news. And I think Sean's going to update us on our school.
Yeah, we're in a really good place. I think this is the first time we've come to you from our new location. We finally got in here in May, early June, doubled our square footage. Like Paula said, Kevin and Keith came by to help us out with the on-site visit. So they've seen it. It's amazing. And, you know, from a operational and financial perspective, I don't think we could be in a better place than we are right now. We're enrolling approximately 30, 32 students every 6 months. The cardiac program is driving that with 20 to 22 every 6 months. We could put in 60 if we had the clinical sites and the places to put them. But at this point, that's where we're gonna stay. And from a financial perspective, we've gone from a significant loss 2 years ago to profitability last year. And then our most current financial statement for the year ended June 30th, 2022, was almost a $400,000 profit. So we couldn't be more thrilled. And with the ABHES outcome, I think things are looking really good for us.
Great. Well, thank you. And I think, you know, the purpose of this agenda item is really focused on the financials. And so although if people do have, you know, burning questions outside of that, feel free to ask them. You know, and I just want to echo the comments that Mr. Kerrigan just made. You know, 2 years of audited financial statements demonstrating increase in net assets. There's been an increase in enrollment, reduction of expenses, and relocation to a space that's both bigger and less expensive. So congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations on finding anything that's less expensive in the Phoenix metro area.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think.
Plus, it's beautiful.
Well, good. Well, we'll have to come for a site visit. Thanks.
Yes, you will.
Thanks for the mountain and for not inviting me. And so, let's see, I guess the only question that I have is, you know, you had a settlement agreement that you signed in May with the Toshiba commercial finance organization. And is that, you know, moving forward, or am I misreading that?
No, that's true. That's what happened. We finally settled on a lease that was entered into in 2013 for 8 ultrasound machines. That was a never-ending lease. It was an egregious lease. The amount of money they wanted for these 8 machines proved to be challenging to us over the years. And then even when we got to a point where we were making monthly payments, they got a little fast and loose with the lease agreement, in my opinion. And so we finally put a stake in the ground and said, look, we're, you know, we say we owe you $100,000. You say we owe you $300,000. And so we're going to go to court. And we ended up settling in the middle. Surprise, surprise. Okay. But then so, you know, even with the $200,000 we had to pay them, we're still almost at $1 million in cash in June, and we're at $1 million in cash right now. And that's off our books. And that substantially actually resulted in a gain from debt extinguishment on our books and got rid of a huge portion of our capital lease debt. So all in all, it really worked out in the end for us. It freed us up, and now we can, those machines are so obsolete at this point, we're trading those in and getting newer and better ones. So I think it was a win-win-win for us at that point.
Well, good. And so in the audit, there is a lease obligation that was pretty high. So that's gone with a.
That was it. Yeah, that was it.
Great. Yeah, I think your cash reserves had dwindled to about $400,000 a couple of years ago.
So yeah. Really yeah.
There are questions from other board members. Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve the regular vocational and degree granting license and increase the surety bond to $156,570. Do you agree to the stipulation?
Yes.
Okay. Can I get a second, please?
Mike Romano, second.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. Mr. LaMountain?
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Well, 5 ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Great. Well, thank you very much. It's always nice to see you. And I guess I have a question, Mr. LaMountain. Does the foundation stay on quarterly reporting, or do we change that with 2 years of net increase in assets?
Yeah, I think, Dr. Mittman, I think the Finance Committee can take that up at the next committee meeting.
Okay.
And Mr. Kerrigan, I would suggest you and Paula put a letter together stating that you would like to get to come off of financial reporting and just send that
to me. Assuming that they do.
I know you're going to bring it up, by the way. So.
I don't know what I'm going to do without you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you'll send that to me, and then we will put them on the finance agenda, and we can you can take it up at that time and make that decision.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, both of you. And happy all of the holidays. You mentioned
Christmas. Happy holidays.
Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and I'm not sure what else. Best wishes for a wonderful holiday season.
And I all right.
It would Thank
be,
you.
It would be Festivus.
Okay. Thank you all.
All right. Please, thank you so much.
Bye now.
Dr. Mittman, you're on mute.
Do you want to hear why I'm on mute?
Why are you on mute?
You guys done? Okay. Moving on. They wanted to vote. They want to know why you didn't call them for the vote. All right. Next up, we have a provisional license renewal approval discussion and possible vote with Surah College. Our lead is Mr. Ball. And so, Mr. Ball, take it away.
Okie dokie.
And do we have a representative of Surah College on the line?
We have two representatives, Karen Bugnow and Dr. Cindy Olson, our Executive Dean of Nursing.
Okay. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Sure. Since we were here last year, we've had a lot more going on. We had enrolled three new students in January. We submitted our letter to DEAC in June, and they accepted our letter of intent, and our application was then submitted October 1st, and we're still waiting to hear back from them on that. We did go to a conference for accreditation through DEAC in October also, which was very helpful to us. And at that conference, they said they're very backed up on their accreditation process. So it's moving along, but slower than we'd like, of course. And then October, we also had our first two graduates of the program who both received their MSN degree as a nurse educator and got promotions at their workplace. So that was, we were happy to hear that from them. And we are anticipating five more students in January. We're still working hard on enrollment because without accreditation, as Dr. Leck will tell you, for nursing programs, it's very difficult to get students to enroll in a program that's not accredited yet.
Yep. Yep. So it looks like everything in your application is good. This is what we call a startup school, so to speak. They've only been in business for about, what, 2 or 3 years?
Two and a half years.
And so they're not accredited. They're not in Title IV. Very small student body. So naturally, their financials show losses, as would be expected in the startup. So I guess the question I would have is, you have a small loss in 20, small loss in 21. The loss so far this year has gone up quite a bit. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing to rectify the situation and try to turn a profit?
Well, so our losses went up because, again, Dr. Rahman is very committed to the Surah College and its success. And so he did hire another part-time person because it's very difficult to run a nursing program without having another faculty person in place that you can do like inter-rater reliability on your questions and your and how you grade papers. And also, I'm working on accreditation for the CCNE, too. So once we get through our DEAC, then we'll do the nursing accreditation for our program. So we are looking at then some certificate programs that we could add to Surah College that may assist in the income becoming larger. But again, Dr. Rahman is committed to this college and its success, and he is willing to finance it until we get to a place where we are turning a profit, which at this time it takes 25 students to turn a profit. And I think the good news is, and of course, once we have our DEAC accreditation, we'll be able to get our SARA, and then we'll be able to take students outside the state of Arizona, which will be helpful to us too. So that we're hoping for more students that way. But we're also getting a lot, all of our students for the second and third cohort have been word of mouth students. So the ones that were in the program referred other students to the program. So that's been very beneficial to us.
And Dr. Rahman is committed to funding any losses that are necessary?
Yes. Yeah.
To keep it going.
Yeah. And he's written a letter of commitment to state that.
Yeah. Okay.
In our initial application, I believe when he had wrote that, it was a 5-year financial commitment. I think we're halfway there. When we did the DEAC accrediting conference that we did, it looks like our application is, you know, everything they're asking for, but again, it's all time, and you know, of course, we'll have to meet with them as well.
Right, exactly. Okay. Do any other board members have any questions?
your programs have indirect practice, the practicum built into it, even for the educator?
Right? Yes.
Mm-hmm. It does. So the capstone is really the those hours.
Well, they have some hours in the, they have hours in the advanced physical assessment class, and then yes, and then the rest are in the capstone.
Yeah. Have you I don't know that there's a specific number, but have you checked CC&E to determine whether or not there are and those hours meet it prior to even submitting to DEAC? And
yes, that's why actually when we had originally written up our curriculum, we did not have those hours in the physical assessment class. And then when reviewing CC&E, we knew that that was going to be a requirement. So we built that in.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from board?
No.
Okay. Hearing none. I will make a motion to approve the provisional non-accredited degree granting license application for Surra College with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond be maintained.
I think it's a $38,000 surety. Like, I think we've increased the amount of that the last time. We'll keep that amount.
I believe the staff recommendation, Mr. Ball. Oh no, I'm looking at a different number. Could we get a confirmation from?
Yeah, confirmation is that their current bond is $38,576. Mm-hmm. So to maintain that $38,576, unless you believe that it would be appropriate to, based on their GTR, to reduce that, but it would be the $38,576.
Okay, I'll amend that a motion to make the surety bond $38,576. Do you guys agree with that bond?
Oh, Surra? Surra agrees. Yeah.
They may have agreed. They may have agreed with your other bond.
Yeah, right. We're calling to reduce it right now. No.
We need a second. I'll second it.
Okay.
Okay. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By your vote of five ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Thank you.
Best wishes, you guys.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, next up, we're going to jump to Lions Legacy Equestrian Academy for a non-accredited vocational new application. And our lead is Mr. Wallace.
Yeah, thank you very much. Are there representatives from Lions on the line?
Yes, sir. This is Michelle Leonard.
Go ahead.
And this is Josh Lyons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hi, Josh.
How you doing?
Okay. Do either of you have any opening comments that you'd like to share with us?
I don't. No, thank you.
I don't either.
Okay. Let me ask you a few questions. You're currently licensed and operating in the state of Colorado. Is that a confirmation?
Sir.
Yeah, what brings you to Arizona?
We moved down here. My sister lived down here and we were just moving closer to family. We traveled back and forth.
Okay.
Recently. Yep.
Are you going to maintain the Colorado operation?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let me ask you, in your field here, are there any governing bodies, industry groups, or anything like that that you'd like to share with us?
Not at this time.
Okay. I looked at your financial statements. They look like they're healthy. Have you done a projection of what your costs are going to be to start up in Arizona and when you think you'll have positive cash flow?
Well, we feel pretty strong in our financials. The Lions have moved there. They've been there, I'm going to guess, a little over a year now. So as far as bringing this program to the Arizona facility, we feel really strong that we'll be able to maintain a good financial well-being there, as well as in Colorado, just opening up another opportunity for students to attend either in Colorado or Arizona. As far as, yes, we did have some projected financials that we submitted. We feel pretty strongly in that as we've been doing this program, both of these programs in Colorado for many years, we feel really strong that we'll be able to maintain that financial stability in Arizona as well.
Okay, good. When I looked at your catalog, is that the catalog or is it based on what you use in Colorado?
You know, it was, yes, it is somewhat based on that. We have had to make several adjustments and changes to be in compliance with the state of Arizona, as they are not, they definitely don't go hand in hand between Colorado and Arizona. And so we have modified this catalog to meet your regulations, but definitely off of our Colorado catalog. Just with the experience and what we went through here.
Okay. So, and that modification came as a result of correspondence between your organization and our organization?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What is your tuition?
It's the $20,000 for the level one and the level two program.
And how long does level one and level two take to accomplish?
It's a 4-week course. So we do, and we break it into two sessions. So they attend the first 2 weeks, then there's a 2-week break, and the last 2 weeks.
Okay. And why do people enroll in your program?
I think most of the people enroll in the program that are looking to work in the equine industry, whether that's training horses, training people, expounding on what they already know. We've had a lot of success rates with people just being entrepreneurs in that department. We pursued this in Colorado to open this up to our veterans to be able to use their GI Bill funding, and have had a lot of success with that and able to get our veterans back out in the workforce, and have had a lot of success with that.
Okay. And people who use your program must come to one of your sites. Is that, do I understand that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I was looking at your executive summary. You've trained people all over the world. I don't know how do you do that unless they came to Colorado or, and now Arizona. Is that, can you comment?
So, yes, Josh has traveled all over the world training people. So not only does he just have this school, but for instance, a group of people could hire him to come to their facility, and he could work with them at their facility with a group, a limited number of people, and train with them. So it would be a shorter time frame. We do a 3-day or a 5-day, also symposiums and expositions in the equine field. They've attended and taught their skills there.
Okay. All right, that's the questions I have. Do my fellow board members have any other questions for Lions?
I just have a couple here, just looking at your materials and just trying to understand, similar to Mr. Wallace. First is, it looks like part of the program requires the student to either have a horse of their own or pay kind of a fee in and above that of the tuition. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then what percentage would you say of your students tend to have to pay the fee versus having their own horse?
It is a very small percentage, and we see a little bit more with our veterans that need horses. So really, we've only had a handful of people over the years that have needed to rent horses, but it is an option. And that being said, you know, 99% of our students bring their own horses through the program. But we have that as an option. Like for instance, last year we had some that were traveling back. They just were off duty. And so that we provided the horses because for them to make the time frame work, for them to travel across the United States with horses didn't work. So they leased horses from us for the program.
Okay. And then also in some of your marketing materials, it does suggest that you have to have prior working with horse experience. And I'm trying to reconcile, you provide core training. So essentially a student who did not have prior exposure to horses would not be eligible or permittable to your program?
Well, we really kind of discourage that. And the reason being is we would like to have a little bit of experience. So it wouldn't be that we absolutely would not allow them in, but we may make recommendations that they work with maybe one of our already some of our other trainers in order to be more familiar. Because it's a lot of tuition, the fee is expensive for people to come and to learn how to brush a horse. So we try to discourage those that have no prior horse knowledge or experience or even riding ability to work with maybe one of our other trainers that have already came through the program to be more familiar before attending this program.
Okay. And not that you can't set that requirement, but more so just you may consider, I noticed in one of your marketing materials you had, it almost seemed as though it was a requirement where it seems preferable or desirable. You may just consider how you bring that forward to the Arizona residents as a potential. Not that we don't have many people who've had exposure to horses here in Arizona, but there may be some who have seen but never had that opportunity, who may misinterpret your marketing materials to suggest that they would not qualify. And so just a point of interest from that standpoint. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That was all the questions I had.
Any other questions?
I was a groom once. my wife had a horse, and the extent of my interaction with the horse was singing hooves and helping saddle the horse. But after a few years before I may consider joining your school. I have ridden my bicycle past the location on many occasions on Rio Verde. It's also called 9 Mile because it's 9 miles up to the top of Rio Verde before it turns into dynamite. And I guess my question, in the materials, you had an aerial view, which is beautiful, and another view. What I didn't see is the property on the balance sheet, either as an asset or as a liability. Is it somehow separated from the academy, and if it is, does the academy pay rent to it?
Yes, we do. We have a lease agreement with the facility.
Okay. And is that, I'm trying to think, I didn't see it on the...
If you look on our projected income and expense for, we do have the facility rental listed as $52,000 for the year.
Okay. Okay. It probably belongs on your balance sheet.
Okay.
It probably also belongs on your... I mean, I just missed it. Maybe on your income statement. I'm just not sure. I didn't see it there. Although that's kind of weird because it should be there because it would affect your bottom line. So
yes. Anyway,
if you could just make sure, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. LaMountain, though the academy will be on quarterly reporting for the first year?
They would not. They will come before the board a year from now to renew their conditional license to a regular.
Okay. All right. Well, then just have it on there before a year from now. Yeah, plus beautiful. You know, every time I go up and down that road, I see like, you know, beautiful horse properties on either side. So I'm sure it's a wonderful location for people to go to the program.
Yes, we are really happy with the facility and feel like it really offers a lot for our students. Definitely a nice state-of-the-art facility.
Great. Okay. All right.
Real quick, just because you said that, caution in your marketing materials to make claims like that, because it can be difficult to justify those. And I'm not sure Colorado, but certainly here in Arizona, when students bring complaints forward, they can sometimes say, the school said state of the art, and how are they substantiating that? I don't agree with it. And so just not that you can't get there to claim those things, but just caution. And I'm sure you were just sharing that in pride of your facility, not that you would be using it on marketing materials, but I just, as the head of the complaint committee, I always try and help guide our schools out there to try and keep safe from those statements.
Absolutely. We appreciate that.
All good. Thank you.
And Mr. Romano, I'll counter your comments, because in, I think it was in the executive summary, Mr. Lyons, who I guess has a global reputation, it was referred to that he has earned an above average level of respect in the equine industry. So I would say that the Academy has exercised unusual restraint in some of its language.
I appreciate that.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
If there are no other comments or questions, this is Scott Wallace. I'd like to make a motion to approve for Lyons Legacy Equestrian Academy a conditional non-accredited vocational program license application with the stipulation that the $30,000 surety bond is maintained. Does Lyons agree with the surety bond requirement?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
That's my motion.
This is Mark Romano, I'll second.
We have a motion, we have a second. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, no nays, that motion passes. And if I may just have 1 second, Mr. Wallace and Dr. Mittman, just want to thank Josh Lyons and the group. And we know you're going through a difficult time today, and we wish you the best, and we hope everything comes out the way it should. So our thoughts are with you, Mr. Wallace.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. Next up is Apex Dental Education for non-accredited vocational new application, and our lead is Dr. Leck.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. Is anyone from Apex Dental on the line who would like to make an opening statement?
Yes. I am on the line, Rachel Line Barrier.
Okay. Would you like to make an opening statement?
It's nice to meet you all. I've talked to at least one of you, and we are hoping to have a dental, an accelerated dental assisting course there in Arizona, and speak with you guys today on that.
Thank you very much. Okay, so I've reviewed all your materials and I have a slew of questions for you. So the first one I have for you is I can see you're using BLS as a reference for employment, but I'm curious as to moving to the Phoenix market specifically, only in that we we see a fair number of dental assistant programs. And so I'm curious as to coming here and what your interest is in Phoenix.
Well, just to provide more provide an education for dental assistants, you know, get them into the workforce quicker, things like that.
Okay. I'm looking at your two-year forecast. You double the number of locations, so it looks like you're trying to go to more than one, and you double the number of classes, but your student count isn't doubled. I'm assuming that's because you're trying to open a second location in the second year, halfway through the year. Is that correct, or is there another reason?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I see that you are listed as the instructor for Scottsdale, but the other org chart looks like it has the instructor, looks like they run that location. Is that correct? Because you're not here, are you? You're right.
Right. I do not live there. I will be commuting back and forth until we can get, you know, everything situated in that location.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's go to your marketing materials. So I had a question for board staff on this. The website already lists Arizona without approval. Is that an issue?
It is an issue. Is that still live, Rachel?
It shouldn't be, no. But I actually have Neil here with me, and he can look at that.
Yeah. That's one of the requirements ahead of time, is that there's no live site.
Okay.
And I used the link, so would the links in the document have, it would still show that though, wouldn't it? It would still be a live link.
If you can see it in the link, then it would be live.
Yeah, then it is. Okay, so I don't know what you want me to say about that then.
Well,
that would need to come down until approval.
Okay.
Okay. So a couple things. You have a statement on there that says the earning potential of a dental assistant is above average in the healthcare assisting market segment, with $38,660 as the median income for a dental assistant. But there is no citation on that. So there's nothing that you are using as the foundation for that statement, which means it could look like it's a salary promise by you. First student that graduates that doesn't make that much money is probably going to be at your doorstep saying you said I could. So. Yeah. You definitely want to cite anything where you're bringing in data.
Okay. Okay.
And then to that point in your marketing materials, you have a statement that says, as a registered dental assistant, you will have the potential to make over $40,000 a year. So I'm not sure where you're getting your numbers, because the numbers don't match, the salaries don't match. So I think you've got some issues there.
Okay. If you don't mind, I was actually going to let Neil just talk about that.
Yeah, so that is, we can clear that up to where they match, but the over 40 is the potential for the income. The 38 number was the Bureau of Labor specific statistics, and that was a Phoenix specific number. But if needed, we can have those matched with experience. That number obviously goes up, and also depending on geographic location.
Yeah, so all that stuff, your website is pretty bare. So all that stuff, I think, is probably pretty important. You know, if you're caveating what you want, doesn't necessarily mean they have to match per se, but you sure want to tell people what it is you're talking about and where that data is coming from, because it's not your data, right?
Okay.
So you also have some language in your marketing piece that says that you have a state-of-the-art in there. What makes it state of the art in a dental office?
We tend to partner with newer locations that, and we also partner with dentists and run courses out of operating dental offices. So I guess the state of the art is objective, but we do have dentists that upkeep their equipment, that have regulations on what they can practice with, and they do that for their practice, and in turn we benefit from that with our students.
Yeah, but I mean, even what you're talking about can also just be like well maintained, right? So maintenance doesn't even mean state of the art. So you're gonna want to be very careful with the words that you're using to describe things. If you can't prove it, don't use it, I think is the my little motto. If you can't prove it, don't use it.
Okay.
So you might want to go back to that. In your FAQs, you have a question in there that says, do you offer job placement assistance? And your answer is, we constantly grow our network of dental practices who are always looking for skilled new assistants to join their team. So I'm not sure if that's a yes or a no. Do you offer job placement assistance? Yes or no?
No, we do not.
Okay. So
we help all of our students, but I guess it was a general statement so that we are not guaranteeing job placement. But with our network, we are pretty successful in with our students obtaining employment either during or after our course. But it's kind of like you said, an indirect answer in that we do not guarantee that. And we don't have a specific job placement coordinator or department for those purposes.
I would be very clear on your answer there, because you couldn't get one way or the other with that. So someone can read that as a promise of yes, you do, right? Versus the no, you don't. So if you do not have that, you should really say that.
Okay.
You also have going back to the words, modern classroom instruction. I don't actually know what modern classroom instruction is. Do a lot of instructing and don't know what that means. So might want to look at your adjectives that you're using in here. The next question is about board staff. Was the proof of liability assurance received?
The initial one, there is still a the professional liability that needed to be added in. Rachel, do you know the status of that?
Yes, they are finalizing that. I should have it within a few days. I know that we discussed, still having the meeting, and then once that's received, then I would send it over to you all.
Right. So Dr. Leck, in this case, what we would do is just stipulate that that would be received before the license would be issued.
Yes, sir. I've got that on. All right. Next is... Okay. Your website, we're back to still on the website. On the very first page of your homepage, you have a bar and it says dates and tuition. When I click on that, it goes to locations. It does not list dates. It does not list tuition. So you might want to fix that, because I started looking for your tuition and you have inconsistent tuition. On the website, you have it listed as $35.50. And in the materials, you have it listed as $58.50. That is a significant difference.
That has been updated. And again, that shouldn't have been a live page. I actually just logged in and see where that it is showing that. Those pages have been updated, ready to go live. And the previous page has been unlinked as of this conversation.
Because it's no longer showing the tuition, which is in, I think, your FAQs.
Oh, you're speaking to the FAQ?
That's the only place I can find your tuition, because your tuition and dates page doesn't exist, doesn't work, goes to the locations. All right, moving on to questions regarding your catalog. You have a section there regarding like the attendance policy and those types of things. And, with a 10-week program, you're allowing 2 weeks of absences. You talk a lot about making stuff up. It was just really kind of confusing, because for a 10-week program that's pretty short, there's a lot of caveats in there. I think you're going to run into some issues as far as students following along on that. You might want to try and go back to it and kind of figure out how to make it more simple. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And it's excused, not excused, what makes something excused versus not excused. None of that's there. So I think you guys got to do some work there.
Okay.
So I have some concerns about your grading too. Kind of the same thing. It kind of seems like you're trying to meet a lot of different masters, and that's probably not the best idea. You have a statement that says if a student is not making adequate academic progress as deemed by the director, right? So this is, you know, they're not making their 80% or whatever, you're putting them on probation as deemed by the director. It's very subjective. It doesn't tell students necessarily what the expectation is, which I'm assuming is going to be 80% if that's what it is. Like they have to bring it up to 80%, or I think you have to give something because you're going to get into some issues with that from a student understanding perspective, right?
Okay.
And then under requirements to practice, in the catalog, it says there's no additional requirements. And I'm not, you know, I've not been in a dental program, so I'm not exactly sure on this. So I'm trying to clarify. So if there's no licensure, I'm assuming they don't have to register or get anything from the state, but on your faculty requirements, it says that they will be licensed dental assistants or registered dental assistants or something. So why would the how would the faculty do that thing that the students don't have to do?
There's different levels of a dental assistant with the dental board. You have a basic dental assistant. You have an expanded function dental assistant, which is licensed. You have expanded functions in radiography and corneal polishing. We expect our instructors to have that to be able to teach the basics of those within the course. And we can clear that language up as well.
Okay, that would be great because that that answers a lot. So you're just offering a program to cut, you're getting in and out. You're just being a basic. You don't have anything that helps you be the registered or the licensed group, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so I think that would be really good. And I know, you know, it's not students aren't getting the materials that we are for like what the faculty credentials are, but that really does help me understand because I didn't understand that part. So I think that was good. The next question I have is about clock hours. So your program is listed as clock hours, and this might even be for Kevin, I'm not sure. It's 80 clock hours, and your program is 10 weeks, and it goes from 8 to 5, which is exactly 8 hours a day. I'm assuming a student's not sitting in there exactly 8 hours a day with no lunch and no breaks. And so when the expectation of a student to do 80 clock hours, Kevin, is any breaks assumed in those 80 hours typically, or is it really 80 hours of instruction? And is that something that the state looks at?
It's not. Those are typically the hours are calculated at hours in the, so if it's 1 hour, it's 60 minutes. Accreditors and certain accreditors consider 1 hour 50 minutes. Based on that, but in our terms, what you would do is look at it's a 60 minute window of time. So in this case, being 80 hours, it would be 80 full hours that the institution would have to provide that service to the students, that education to the students.
So if they were given a 30 minute break, lunch for lunch, for example, then their hours really should go from 8 to 5:30 to give them the full 80 hours, right? Because they have a 30 minute break a day or something.
That would be correct because the student would have the opportunity to go back and make the statement that I paid for an 80-hour program. However, I only got 72 hours worth of instruction, but they paid for all 80.
Yep, that's what I thought. Okay. All right, so that's something that you guys are going to have to.
So the 8 to 5 accounts for an hour break for that day. So they do have breaks.
Okay. But that's the problem we're saying. So. Right? Or am I losing my mind? Oh, no, I did my math wrong. You're right. You got it right. Yeah. Uh-huh. So is it 1 hour of lunch break and no other breaks, or is it like 30 minutes and 15 and 15 or something?
We typically set aside 1 hour. I will say that there has been flexibility in the past. If students want to shorten their lunch break and come back, then maybe we talk about either a afternoon break or an early dismissal, but we do reach that 8 hours per day.
Okay, perfect. So just making sure you get that whole 80 hours in. Okay, perfect. Great. Awesome. Okay. And then, interesting. I don't know where I saw it, but, Rachel, you're referred to as the acting owner, and I'm not quite sure what an acting owner is. Are you an owner or what's acting?
I'm the owner. I'm not sure what acting owner means, actually.
It's in your materials.
On the program, yes.
Okay, so whatever that was
located.
It's I think it must be in your catalog because that's where I listed it. It is in your catalog.
Okay.
This is where I found that. Hold on, let me see. I think you're gonna have to go look for it, but it's in there.
Okay.
Trying to see if
I have to pull it out.
You're correct. It does. You're correct. We'll get that changed. I don't know where that would have come from, honestly.
I didn't know either. I was new to me. Okay. And then my last question before I open it up to board members is back to board staff. When I look at the materials there, it looks like there was quite a few deficiencies along the way through this application. And I'm trying to determine if all of those deficiencies have been resolved, or do we need to go through the deficiency list one at a time to determine if it needs to, if we need to talk about those?
Dr. Leck, all of the deficiencies have been cleared with the exception of the certificate of insurance. And that's the one that at this particular point in time, we're waiting on clarity.
Okay, great. Thank you, Kevin. All right. Well, that's the end of my questions. Does any of my fellow board members have questions? Certainly, Mike, you're not going to let me down. You're going to have some of the questions.
You were very thorough. And so I appreciate that, as always, Dr. Leck.
Thank you.
So, no, I think you've given good guidance, and I appreciate your statements in regards to the state of art piece. Recognizing that obviously you've put a lot of attention into your facilities and selecting the people that would be able to coordinate this effort. Just food for thought, you know, obviously it's reflective of the industry. So sometimes instead of state of the art, the term state of industry is used instead. Not to say that you need to use that, just merely providing some guidance on that piece of it. And then finally, it does sound like you work with employers. So it does sound like you are providing support in employment, but your enrollment agreement does clearly state you are not guaranteeing employment. So I just share those two points, and that's it for me, Dr. Leck.
Thank you, sir. Kevin, I saw your hand raised. I mean, not Kevin, Keith. Right, Keith, or was it Kevin? I thought it was
me. It was me, and I'm just, could you, Dr. Leck, if you could just email me some of your notes so at the end we can go over them with Rachel and get what is required and then what your suggestions are, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, sir.
I thank you.
On its way.
So I have a question. In the school's been operating in Arkansas since 2018, I believe, right? And you've been profitable, at least in the financial statements that you've shared with us. And in the financial statements, there's not a lot of either cash or liquidity on your balance sheet. I know that, you know, the last audited statements showed, you know, a profit of, I think, $119,000 for the previous year. You know, there was a large distribution that went to the owners, which is your purview. But the cash on hand at the time, I think, was like $50 or $80. The cash in the most recent financial statements that you shared with us was about $180. And so I'm just wondering, do you have all of the resources to launch another site with, you know, the attendant expenses of rent and things that, you know, you may need to backstop for a period of time until your enrollment reaches the levels that you project?
Yes, any owner distribution is taken after the fact of any reinvestment into the school and growth and personnel.
Okay. So with like unaudited statements, like where do things stand in terms of the school's resources in terms of your current assets, in other words, cash and other liquid assets to be able to fund what you're going to do here in Arizona?
So for us, it's cyclical for per semester, and we have four semesters per year. So we have a buildup and then either a reinvestment or distribution. A lot of times we'll delay the distribution until the end of the year so that we are financially capable of any growth, any investment that's needed, and things of those sorts. So I think, not with it in front of me, those were probably end of the year statements. So that was post distribution. So, but prior to that, 24 hours prior to that was probably a larger cash reserve.
And the last ones that we have are from March of 2022. And so your fiscal year is a calendar year, right? So you're coming up on
it. Is.
So where do things stand now?
An exact balance, I do not know, but
just in terms of
so we're towards the end of a semester. So we're probably, relative to this, the four semester cycle, we have more cash on hand now than we will 2 weeks from now. So once the semester wraps up, we'll invest, distribute, and start all over again.
Okay. And this year will be roughly as profitable, more profitable, or less than the previous year?
Relative to last 3 year window, I would say last year is relatively lower to the previous 2 years. I think a combination of the pandemic and the economic situation nationally, we have seen a slight decline in enrollment. Nothing concerning at this point. But if we're going to compare to past, it is slightly lower.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. Dr. Mammon, would you like me to make a motion?
Por favor.
Gracias, señor. Okay, I will make a motion that we approve the conditional non-accredited vocational program license application with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond is maintained and that you acknowledge that you will not receive your license until AZPPC staff has received the professional liability insurance in hand.
You agree to that?
Yes, I agree.
Hi, this is Beth. I'm subbing in for Seamus in this on this board, but typically before a board grants a license, the license does have to be administratively complete. So if the board is missing a part of what it needs, specifically the certificate of insurance in this case, then my recommendation would be for the board to table this matter and bring it back at the next board meeting.
So Kevin Mountain, executive director of the board, this would be something that we have not done in the past. We have typically, because the certificate of insurance will more than likely be here within a day or two, that we would bring it before the board if we did not receive that in our January board meeting. But the challenge would be this institution is trying to get themselves rolling for January 1 for their new cycle in Arizona, and this would delay that until a minimum of February.
Okay. If what the board is doing is consistent with their typical practice, then I don't want to disturb that. But if this would be something out of the ordinary, then That would be a different scenario, but it sounds like this is what the board usually does.
This is consistent with what the board has acted in the past.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Mike Romano, I'll second.
Mike Romano seconds. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By the vote, 5 ayes, no nays, the motion passes.
Congratulations.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, next up, Code Steel Academies. And our lead is Mr. Romano.
All right. Before we get started, Mr. LaMountain, are there any updated documents in the file, such as the fire inspection report or anything that is notable for this particular school?
Dr. Mittman, Mr. Romano, no, there are no additional documents other than the financial document that I sent to you, Mr. Romano, last night, which is also included in the folder, but no additional documentation has come in.
All right. Very good. Thank you for the update. I appreciate that. Who do we have representing the school today?
Oh, that will be Thomas Kubik. Thank you, sir.
All right, Mr. Kubik.
Yes. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yes. Would you like to make an opening statement here?
Yeah. Thank you. It's always good to be the last thing on the agenda and the only thing between you and lunch. So we appreciate that. Today, listening in is Jeremy Fuller, who is the president of the Board of Trustees, Laurie Fuller, who is the treasurer of the board, Randy, who you just met, who is one of our trustees, and I serve as secretary to the board. Code Steel is a bit of an anomaly to what you typically license because we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're not a for-profit institution. We're offering vocational programs in reasonable lengths with apprenticeships attached, which should lead to a direct path to employment in those fields. And our goal is to graduate students with little or no debt. That's one of our guiding principles. And we have, we've secured space on 35th Avenue in Phoenix, and it's being renovated to allow for our student starts when that occurs. We've reached a number of agreements with the Vitalist Foundation and the Technology Assistant Partnership for Arizona, which is part of the Vitalist Foundation. And they provide some financial sponsorship and administrative support for grants that we wish to go for as a nonprofit. They will be our sponsoring institution for that until we get our wherewithal and growth. And we're currently growing our donation population. We sent a letter last evening to Mr. LaMountain regarding that. And in addition, I would say that to our programs, we plan to be a proctoring and testing center for the non-destructive testing and welding certifications. And one of the things that makes us an interesting school is that we will be using the Miller Welding augmented virtual reality welding system, which I don't believe any school in Arizona uses. And apparently it's an industry standard right now that's growing. So we're very pleased to be here, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I'll try and jump in more from a higher level and then try and dig down a little bit. Just starting off with the financials. So the financials that were provided showed a modest amount in the account currently.
Yes.
And then with a lot of what looked like emails or statements from the school saying, we should have this, or we will have this, or this group is committed to this. But I guess I'm a little concerned just understanding the type of costs associated with operating a school of this nature. Although the optimism is nice, not having the financial sustainment is a little bit concerning to me. And so I didn't see anything that actually substantiated true letters of commitment on a financial basis from any institution that you had mentioned. I wasn't sure if those existed. to help substantiate. I know you also did talk about possibly some transactions that would be hitting your account today, but any updates you can bring that would increase the board's confidence of financial stability and solvency to be able to operate this business on a sustaining basis?
Oh, absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more. We want to be financially sustainable for the long term. We did provide to the board staff the Vitalist Foundation agreements that we have in place now. Those we did send on with part of our financial information. And then we are, Mr. Blankenship and myself are meeting with Earl Hopper today to receive checks and to tour the school facility after this meeting is over down at the 35th Avenue location. And then he has other investors, donors, I would say. I have to get out of the for-profit mindset, excuse me. Donors that will be coming next week to also tour the school and bring us contributions to the school. So we should have this week and between next week, between $70,000 and $100,000 come into the school as operating capital to get us launched. Because we right now we're self-funded. The board members are paying out of pocket for all of the expenses that we've incurred. And we plan to, we're not planning to enroll any students until we're licensed and then we have our equipment in place and so forth. And we'd be happy to provide reports to the board how that would progress. But as you know, we can't enroll or market the students until we receive a license.
Correct. Mr. Lamont, can you clarify, the only things I see in the financial piece are letters from the school, not any type of agreements that are established. Is the board staff in possession of those agreements?
The only, Dr. Mitt and Mr. Romano, their only information that we have is what was provided to you yesterday. There was a letter on that email chain that I sent to you, which was from their one of their investors for the Randy or Tom, I believe it was the $70,000 commitment from one of the individuals, but there is no, outside of that letter that's attached to the email, there are no additional documents that were provided other than the bank account statement.
Okay.
Can I ask a clarifying question of Mr. LaMountain on your question? Is that all right?
Yeah.
I don't want to interrupt. So, Mr. LaMountain, do we have a set of financial statements, or you know, we had the kind of the screenshot of the bank statement. Do we have a set of financial statements?
Dr. Mitt and Mr. Romano, we do not have any financial statements at this time. The information that you have in front of you, which is the bank statement, which shows the minimal amount of funding in there, and the commitment from the potential donors, those are the only documents that we have. And I did have a conversation with Mr. Blankenship yesterday in regarding that. So perhaps Mr. Blankenship can provide some color.
I did submit my financial statement. I thought I had uploaded that a few months ago, my personal financial statement. If I may go back though and add to the expenses of the school, our rent is only $750 per month, which was granted to us by the pastor, in which is our landlord in the building. And we are going to start off, as I was mentioning to Mr. LaMountain, with some certification programs, short in length, to raise immediate funds. Obviously less than 40 hours and less than $1,000, and we're prepared to start teaching those tomorrow. So those will help us provide some interim funds, operating funds. So we don't have a lot of overhead. Our only the only salary will be myself as admissions, doing admissions and student services in the interim. And then our instructor cost, which they've agreed to work on a contingency basis, a revenue share with the proportion of the certificate. So I hope that brings some light and color to what we're trying to accomplish.
And then if I could add a little bit, Code Steel is a non-destructive testing company, and we are providing the equipment to get those short-term classes started that Randy referred to. So we have the equipment, we have the place, we have the instructors ready to go, and then that will help us raise funds to get kicked off while we're waiting for any other funds coming in.
Yes, certainly. I think we can all appreciate, though, both the welding side and non-destructive side do have consumables within those curriculums, and those consumables add up quickly. As an operator myself of a welding course, I can appreciate the costs. And outside of the virtual equipment, that absolutely is a benefit and used by many institutions. You still need that actual hands-on of doing the welds and then validating those welds. And so the concern comes, you know, as students start to enroll and invest their dollars to verify that they're getting the education that they're paying for, does the school have, again, the available financials to bring in those materials as needed to support the success? I am in no way questioning your commitment level to ensuring that students get what they need to be successful. So please don't misinterpret my questions in that nature, merely from the fact of, you know, providing a license to ensure that there are the consistent and appropriate financial documents that we look for schools to be able to provide to ensure that we are setting students up for success. And we're also helping protect the institution as well, as they're starting down a venture that they, in most cases, are very passionate about pursuing. And I would expect that to be the case here as well. So please don't interpret the questions anything but from that perspective for that. You had poked a little bit as well at the instructors. And I noticed on the resumes for the instructors, they didn't include any actual background in welding or non-destructive testing. But when I visited the website, which was up yesterday, I know it has a coming soon now, and that's because we identified that the school was openly enrolling, or at least had the ability to pursue enrollments prior to licensure. You know, and Mr. Lamont was kind enough to reach out in regards to that. But yesterday on the website, at least, the two instructors that you had provided resumes for, it seemed as though they did have extensive background from that standpoint, but that did not seem to translate onto their actual resumes that you provided to the board. I was just wondering why there was a difference there and if you needed an opportunity to update those resumes for the information you provided the board.
Yeah, we can definitely upgrade those resumes. And as far as the experience goes, there's a depth of knowledge on the non-destructive side. There's three levels. There's level one, that's a general tech. Level two is the one that the level threes send out to go do it and oversee the projects. And then the level three is the ones that are overseeing the program. It's kind of like the quality control manager. And we do have the level three in place. And I don't think we have, you're right, I don't think we have all of those abilities on both documents.
Yeah, right now the only thing you have on the documents is for one of the instructors that you have, his only certification or experience that you provided was remote pilot license for drones, which would not be applicable to what we're talking about here. And then the other individual you have is having a diploma for nuclear piping, which I'm sure probably does carry some background in welding and what that looks like. But again, it doesn't suggest, at least through the documentation that you provided us, that these individuals would have the background necessary to deliver that type of education. But again, it sounds like from your website that they do. So that may be a takeaway for us here as we progress to try and fill in some of those gaps a little bit so we can better appreciate
that piece of it.
We will update that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It seemed like they had very colorful backgrounds and experience that would be completely applicable to what you're teaching. It just wasn't documented in the materials that you provided us. Let's see. There are, as of yesterday when the website was live, and just some other things that I noticed when looking at the website, and similar to what came up in some earlier discussions, if you are going to quote salary ranges on any level, you should at least dictate or document where you're pulling that from. If it's the Bureau of Labor Statistics or whatever that looks like, but just throwing a range out of, you know, 48,000 to 95,000 plus and not having anything to anchor against that could be misleading to the student.
And yeah, I thought we had that qualified, so we can fix that because those are BLS numbers.
Yeah, I did not. I'm sure you. That's probably where you drew them from. They just were. There was no asterisks and no denotation on the website that supported that.
Okay.
So more so, not to be. Please don't interpret this as I've done a scrub of your quality and assurance of your website or your materials, but rather just keeping that in mind of when you bring those things forward, please make sure that you can reference them. There may be many other areas in your materials that you may not be disclosing that or identifying it. So just something to keep in mind from that standpoint. All right. And so, you know, that really kind of rounds out my questions that I have. I will say, you know, it's very difficult for me, from the standpoint without financials and seeing what we would normally expect from a school in this case, to really make a motion, to proceed forward. But, prior to me making any type of motion, and just being transparent, I wanted to at least, turn it over to my fellow board members if they had any questions.
I have a couple of questions. So Mr. Blankenship, in your, the document that you submitted, you are listed as the principal founder of Crestcore Education Group in Phoenix. Did I have that spelled correctly? C-R-E-S-T-C-O-R. And is that a registered corporation in Arizona?
It is, sir. Yes, sir. In the state of Texas. Yes, sir, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, in the state of Texas. Okay. Yes. And so, because I didn't see it in the Arizona Corporation Commission. So right. You don't have to be registered. Okay. I think, Mr. Romano, you covered my questions. I have to agree with you that without seeing you know, financial statements, I don't see how we could evaluate, you know, the kind of the breadth of the resources that would be needed to, you know, to run the school. And I know that the school, you know, has not existed yet. On the other hand, I assume that the school is incorporated, right? And so
it is. It's approved by the IRS as a 501c3 corporation.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, I would want to see, I'm just echoing what Mr. Romano, what you just said, that I would want to see just a regular set of financial statements before you know, I would be comfortable voting on a motion to approve the school.
Thank you, Dr. Mettman. At this point in time, what I might suggest, and it doesn't, I don't believe it requires a motion, but what I would recommend here is that we defer this until the January or February timeframe to give the school the opportunity to put those in place. At this point, that may also move some of those donations into an account as well that creates that awareness and greater visibility. It also looks like there's opportunity because without the fire inspection being complete, you wouldn't be able to get licensed anyways, although that may come sooner. But that still is an outstanding item as well. It may also give time to update the resume information that you've provided or that we've talked about as well. So great news is you're really, really close, right? Like you've done a lot of great work here to get to this point. It seems as though there's just a few things that are outstanding that that the board really does need to make a educated decision or motion in this particular case to support the licensure. And we would encourage you to work closely with our board staff to bring those materials forward for us so that we can look to expedite this at either our January or our February meeting. Mr. LaMountain, can you confirm that I do not need to make a motion on that, but that can just be our action?
Let me refer to Mr. Monahan, Assistant Attorney General.
Good morning, board. I apologize for being tardy today, but I left you in good hands with Beth Campbell. I don't think you need a motion. I think the correct language, though, to use would just to say the board's going to take no action and bring this back at a later date.
Okay. Then I would do just that. The board will take no action at this time, and we will look to review it at a later date.
Mr. Romano and Mr. LaMountain, for January, do we have a board meeting or we have a finance committee meeting?
We have a board meeting on the 27th, I believe.
Okay. Good.
Would we be able to put that on the board meeting now?
Mr. Fuller, it is all dependent. So on what you provide, the details that you provide in the financials and the updates, if all of that is, you know, ready by, let's say, mid-January, and you're, you know, we feel that there's a level of comfort that we would have putting you back before the board, then we would do that. So right now it'll be, you know, our goal, as yours would be, is to get you on the January 27th meeting.
Okay.
Well, I'm taking notes. Will we get a list from the staff that will give us specifics on the IOUs?
I will provide that to you by tomorrow.
Great. Thank you. Perfect. Thank you.
Great.
Okay.
We appreciate your time today. We understand this maybe didn't end the way you were hoping it to today, but again, we are one step further, and we look forward to maybe revisiting this with you in the January timeframe.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you. Thank you
for your time.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, let's see what's left. Call to the public. Public input is encouraged. Presentations should be limited to 5 minutes. Please be aware, however, that the committee may not discuss, consider, or take action at this meeting on any item not scheduled on the agenda. During the meeting, additional public comment may be requested, but is generally not allowed. Is there anyone from the public who would like to share a statement, make comments, ask questions? Welcome, Assistant Attorney Seamus Monahan. We usually look forward to at least saying hi to Fred Lockhart, who lost the tent.
I think Fred tried to undo his microphone.
Okay.
Well, we can at least recognize him for his sharp winter dress in the very cold Phoenix weather of 60 degrees.
Okay. Well, hearing none, I motion to adjourn and wish everyone a wonderful holiday season. Be safe and enjoy and be thankful for all the wonderful things we have, including this wonderful staff and fellow board members.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, all. Have a good day.
Right.
Have a good day.